the outcome of these trials, and the conduct of the soul enduring them. In this state of self-abandonment, in this path of simple faith, everything that happens to our soul and body, all that occurs in all the affairs of life, has the aspect of death. This should not surprise us. What do we expect? It is natural to this condition. God has His plans for souls, and He carries them out very successfully, though they are well disguised. Under the name of disguise are such things as misfortune, illness, and spiritual weakness. But in God's hands, everything flourishes and turns to good. He arranges the accomplishment of His highest designs by means which deeply wound our natural feelings. We know that by turning everything to their good, God cooperates with all those who love Him. He brings life out of the shadow of death, and when, with human weakness, we are afraid, faith, which sees good in all things and knows that all is for the best, remains full of a confident courage. As we know that God's activities include everything, direct everything, and do everything, apart from what is sinful, the duty of faith is to adore, love, and receive with joy all those activities. Full of joy and confidence, we must ignore the deception of appearances, and so enjoy the triumph of faith. In this way, I assure you, you will honor God and treat Him as God. To live by faith is to live joyfully, to live with assurance, untroubled by doubts, and with complete confidence in all we have to do and suffer at each moment by the will of God. We must realize that it is in order to stimulate and sustain this faith that God allows the soul to be buffeted and swept away by the raging torrent of so much distress, so many troubles, so much embarrassment and weakness, and so many setbacks. For it is essential to have faith to find God behind all this. The divine life, neither seen nor felt, but there is never a moment when it is not acting in an unknown way, but very sure manner. It is hidden under such things as death of the body, damnation of the soul, and the general disorder of all earthly affairs. Faith is nourished and strengthened by these happenings. It cuts through them all and takes the hand of God, who keeps it alive through everything except sin. A faithful soul should always advance with confidence, regarding all these things as the disguise God assumes, for His immediate presence would terrify us. But God, who comforts the humble, always gives us, however great our feeling of desolation, an inner assurance that we need be afraid of nothing, as long as we allow Him to act and abandon ourselves to Him. Although we are distressed at the loss of our beloved, we somehow feel that we still possess Him. And in spite of all our troubles and disturbance, there is something deeply seated within us which keeps us steadfastly attached to God. Truly, Jacob said, God is in this place, and I never knew it. You seek for God, beloved soul, and He is everywhere. Everything speaks of Him. Everything offers Him to you. He walks beside you. He surrounds you and is within you. He lives with you, and yet you try to find Him. You seek your own idea of God, although you have Him in His reality. You seek perfection, and you meet it in all that happens to you. All you suffer, all you do, all your inclinations are mysteries unto which God gives Himself to you while you are vainly striving after high-flown fancies. God will never come to dwell with you, clothed in these imaginings. Martha tried to please Jesus by cooking him good food, but Mary was content to receive him and listen to him. Yet he deceived even her, and when, after the resurrection, she looked for him as she imagined he would be, he appeared to her as a gardener. When the apostles saw Jesus, they thought he was a ghost. God disguises himself so that we may reach that pure faith which enables us to recognize him under any appearance. When we know this secret of his, it is useless for him to assume any disguise, for we say, "See, where he stands behind our wall. He looks in at the window. He peers through the lattice." O divine love, hide yourself, test us, mingle, confuse, and snap like threads all our ideas and systems. Formerly, we found you in the peace of solitude, in prayer, in various religious exercises, in suffering, in helping our neighbors, in turning away from social and business affairs. We have done all we can to please you, but now we can no longer find you in these things as once we did. May our failure compel us to find you in yourself, and then in all things and everywhere. How mistaken we are not to see you in everything that is good and in every creature. Why should we seek you in any other way than that by which you wish to give yourself, under any other forms than those you have chosen for your sacrament? The less convincing they seem, the more merit there is in our obedience and faith. You make a root below the soil flourish, and you can make fruitful the darkness in which you keep me. So my soul, like a tiny root, will stay hidden in you, and your power will make it send forth branches, leaves, blossoms, and fruit, which, though invisible to you, will nourish and delight the souls of others. When they come to rest and refresh themselves in your shade, give them the fruit they want, not what they think they should have. May all that is grafted on you by grace take and ultimately produce its own individual fruit. Give all you have to all who come, but you yourself continue in your state of self-abandonment and indifference. Stay, little silkworm, in the dark and narrow cell of your comfortless cocoon until the warmth of grace enables you to grow and break out. Eat, then, every leaf grace offers you, and in this activity do not look back at the peace you have lost. The moment God's will tells you to stop, do so. You will experience alternating spells of rest and activity, and changes in yourself which you cannot understand. You will lose all interest in all the old spiritual exercises. You will die and be resurrected and assume the apparel that God has designed for you. So spin away in secret, working away at what you can neither see nor feel. Your whole being will be perturbed. You will condemn yourself for being in a fret. You will secretly envy your companions still lying as if dead because they have not yet arrived where you are. You continue to admire them, although you have left them behind. You continue to spin a silk in which princes of the church and of the world, and indeed a multitude of souls, will glory to be arrayed. And after that, what will happen to you, little silkworms? How will you emerge? What a miracle of grace it is that souls are molded so differently. Who can possibly know where grace will lead them? And who could guess what nature does with a silkworm if he had not seen it? All it needs is leaves, and nature does the rest. Thus, beloved souls, you cannot know from where you came, nor where you are going, nor can you know from what idea of God you have been produced, nor to what end it is leading you. For you there remains only a passive self-abandonment, carrying on without thinking and concerned with no models or examples or any particular mode of spirituality. You must act when it is time for action and stop when it is time to stop. In this self-abandonment, you read or put books aside, talk to people or keep silent, write or drop your pen, and never know what will follow. Finally, after several transformations, the formed and finished soul, now endowed with wings, flies up to heaven, but leaves on the earth a fertile seed to work in other souls.